I'm here with Alexander Mercurius, editor-in-chief of The Duran. Alexander, tomorrow we have the UK elections. This will probably go up on the same day as people go to vote. But for our purposes, we're recording this. Tomorrow we have the people going to vote. Everyone in the UK is going to vote. And we thought it would be good if we do a kind of pre-vote video here as to how you see things the day before people go to the polls. And I'll read you a quick excerpt, Alexander, from Zero Hedge and the FT, Financial Times, then you can take it over from there and give us your thoughts. Okay, according to the FT, a comprehensive survey by pollsters at YouGov found that the Tories are set to win 339 seats on Thursday, with Labour set for 231 and the Liberal Democrats for 15 and the Scottish National Party for 41. According to the FT's analysis of the polls, the latest poll showed that his majority, Boris Johnson, had shrunk to just 28, down from 68 in earlier polls. The model predicts that seats in the north of England, including Bishop Auckland, Great Grimsby, Don Valley, and Ashfield, parts of Labour's infamous Red Wall, could turn blue for the first time in history. Meanwhile, in London, the Conservatives are expected to hold on to seats such as Putney and Wimbledon in South London. Alexander Mercurius.
Yeah, I think this is probably roughly correct. I should say that I was meeting, and I'm grateful to them, by the way. I was meeting with people in the Labour Party last night, and I had some discussions. And my overall impression, I'm not going to give away any confidences, but my overall impression, and I don't think there's any real doubt about this, is that the Labour Party's impossibly complicated Brexit position is costing them a lot of votes. And I say that because their position is that they're going to reject Boris Johnson's proposal. They're then going to renegotiate a proposal based on keeping Britain in the customs union and in the European single market, minus, I think, the infamous Irish backstop, which I think is gone forever. Then they're going to put that to another referendum with Remain as the option and with Jeremy Corbyn stay neutral and not campaigning and saying, not saying which side he is on. Now, I mean, I think that is an impossible position to take. I think it is making many people very cynical. And of course, it is ultimately, and to be very clear about it, a Remain position, because it's a situation where a party leader negotiates a deal with the European Union, which he is not himself prepared to recommend to the people in an election, is essentially designed to fail. It's going to result in a vote for Remain. Now, and you know, I just want to quickly unpack this. I think Jeremy Corbyn understands this very well. He didn't want to be put in this position. He did not want to have a commitment to a second referendum. He resisted it very, very strongly, but he is faced with a parliamentary party which is overwhelmingly in favour of Remain, a shadow cabinet which is also overwhelmingly in favour of Remain. Most of them, by the way, are London MPs, and London is very strongly pro-Remain, and a party membership which is very, very pro-Remain. But this has gone down extremely badly, just as I predicted, with Northern and Midlands working class voters who voted Leave. So when you heard and saw in that poll that you just read out the details about how places like the Don Valley and Ashfield and Greater Grimsby, you know, strong working class seats, overwhelmingly working class, overwhelmingly Labour. The reason those places are going to go and vote Conservative, if they do, is not because Jeremy Corbyn is too much of a socialist or too radical. They probably like that. It is because he is taking a Remain position and they support Leave. They support Brexit. Now, I tried to discuss this with various people in the Labour Party Some of them understand it, but you know, you have also encountered until very recently a wall of denials, and it's fascinating to see how now in the last two weeks of the campaign, far too late in the day, the penny with some of them has finally dropped. They've understood for the first time that this ultra Remain position they're taking is actually losing them votes and seats and potentially the election. It's very late now in the day to see what they can do about it. Now, the only thing I'm going to say about this, the one thing that is working in the Labour Party's favour is that Boris Johnson and the Conservatives have barely fought this election at all. Boris Johnson has skipped all the difficult interviews. He's refused to conduct interviews with really tough journalists like Andrew Neil of the BBC, even though Andrew Neil is well known for being rather right-wing and rather conservative and basically, one suspects, sympathetic to Johnson. And from what they produced a manifesto which is almost empty of policies. The Labour Party, by the way, has far too many policies because they sensed that they were weak on the Brexit position. They overpromised on everything else. And I think they understand that too. But the Conservatives basically offered nothing except getting Brexit done. And as many people have noticed, and as has now been confirmed to me, in far too many seats, the conservative activists are not out there knocking on doors and canvassing. So we have a situation where one party, that's to say the Labour Party, has got itself into a total mess on the Brexit position and has overpromised with far too many policies in its manifesto and has, as a result, angered and embittered its Leave voting working class northern electoral base, and another party, with the Conservative Party, which is approaching this election with, I think, a potentially dangerous complacency and cynicism. I think that overall, the imperative to get Brexit done is so strong among so many people that it will be enough to get the Conservatives over the line. But to be honest about it, they don't deserve it on the basis of the campaign they fought.
Okay, so to sum it up the way I'm reading it, Alexander, is Labour got stuck in this Remain mantra.
Yeah.
Literally stuck in this love for the EU above country.
Yes.
Jeremy Corbyn is a weak leader.
Yes.
At least in regards to this.
You hear lots of people saying this. If you go around and you know, you have sort of people doing, you know, focus groups and, you know, vox box, box, pop, meet, you know, speaking, people say this all the time. And the reason why people perceive him as a weak leader is because he was unable, and I really think it was impossible for him to impose his position on Brexit on his own party. And so people are very cynical about him, they're very cynical about his program, and they are very angry with his party in far too many places.
Yeah, absolutely. No one wants a weak leader, and that's what he displayed throughout this whole Brexit saga, the past, you know, three years of Brexit. He displayed that. On the conservative side, then, Alexander, what you have is an arrogant and complacent conservative party that, in my opinion, if Farage and the Brexit Party really did decide to go at them hard, I think Boris would be in deep trouble. In other words, I think he kind of screwed over the Brexit Party in a way. And Nigel Farage did, in my opinion, it's always my opinion, did put country above, you know, power, Brexit Party power, in order to get to some sort of Brexit deal, even though it's not really a true Brexit that he's looking for and many people are looking for. But Nigel Farage sacrificed The Conservatives took advantage of that. They got even more arrogant. And now they're just kind of, you know, skipping along to the finish line in a way.
That's exactly what I think. That sums it perfectly. As I said, an arrogant, complacent Conservative Party, which I think is unpopular with many, many people. If Nigel Farage had been running them, he might have given them a very close run based on what we have seen in this election. I mean, it is extraordinary to see how thin that manifesto was. I mean, you know, love her or hate her. I remember Margaret Thatcher and the Conservative programs of the 1980s, and they were bursting with ideas, and there was a sense of dynamism behind it. There's nothing like that here. I mean, it's just as a leader who's hiding most of the time. I mean, he won't do difficult interviews. He's done debates with Jeremy Corbyn, in which he basically sticks to one issue, which is Brexit, you know, get Brexit done. But he doesn't really like to debate. He doesn't really like to meet difficult interviews or do difficult journalists. And his party is almost invisible on the ground. So an arrogant and complacent campaign on the Conservative side versus, dare I say, a very incompetent and ill-thought-out one on the Labour side, forced on Jeremy Corbyn by, frankly, equally out of touch and arrogant Remainers within his own party, but which he proved unable and incapable of resisting. So arrogance and complacency versus muddle and incompetence. That is, I'm afraid, the story of this election.
Yeah, then you have guys like Blair, the warmonger Blair, and well, John Major, and all these guys kind of, you know, muddling around, you know, and what's going on. And it confirms to me as well, Alexander, that the importance of having third and fourth parties, a strong third and fourth party like the Brexit Party or UKIP or other parties in the UK as well, other left-oriented parties. Because if you have these parties, they hold that are strong, they hold, you know, Conservatives and Labour, they hold their feet to the fire. They push them to actually come up with policies, to actually go out and campaign, to actually do stuff. And in this case, Brexit, Farage is the driving force behind pushing the Conservatives to get some sort of Brexit deal.
Absolutely. It'd be absolutely clear if Farage hadn't come back on the scene back in the spring at the May European Union elections. It's doubtful we would be seeing any kind of Brexit on the agenda at all. I mean, Theresa May was just kicking it all down the road, and far too many people within the Conservative Party were going along with it. It took the meltdown in the Conservative vote in May to get the Conservatives to understand that if they played that game, they would be putting their own survival at stake. And I'm afraid it's going to take a big electoral defeat or an electoral defeat for the Labour Party for them to understand that taking, you know, fervid Remainer positions when their own electoral base voted Leave, or at least a large part of it did, in the north of England. I mean, it's fair to say most people who vote Labour voted Remain in the referendum, but a key part of the Labour electoral coalition voted Leave. Simply taking those votes for granted was a foolish idea. And I'm going to just add one other thing. I mean, I should point out, Labour has become unhealthily concentrated in London. Jeremy Corbyn is a London MP. John McDonnell, who is his Chancellor and his key ally, and who's also a Remainer, by the way, is a London MP. Keir Starmer, who is the Labour Party's a Brexit spokesman, and who is a fervid Remainer, is a London MP. Emily Thornberry, another fervid Remainer, is a London MP. She's the Foreign Secretary, Shadow Foreign Minister. And Diane Abbott, who is the Shadow Interior Minister, she's also a London Labour MP. London voted overwhelmingly 60%, 40%. For Remain in the referendum. And I think this is giving these people a very distorted idea of how the rest of the country has voted. I don't think they really understand feelings in places like Newcastle or Sheffield or Grimsby or the Don Valley or all those sort of people. And I mean, what we saw with the People's Vote campaign, the, you know, the push for a second referendum, was an overwhelmingly London-based movement, which, as I said, has unbalanced completely a Labour Party that has become an unhealthily London-dominated. So, you know, there we are. But I think that in the end, in this election, arrogance and complacency, which is what we're getting from the Conservatives, will probably win through over muddle and incompetence, because at least the Conservatives are saying they do have one policy, which is getting a kind of Brexit. And I think far too many people in Britain want that to happen. So I think it will win through. But you're quite right. If Farage had fought this election, he could have put the Conservatives under very real pressure. I'm sorry he didn't, actually. I would have liked him to. That's my own
point to see him. Yeah,
I would have liked him to. I think it would have given the election an entirely different dynamic if he had done. And the risk is that after the Conservatives have got their Brexit done, which, as I said, is going to be very incomplete Brexit anyway, a party that looks frankly very bereft of ideas, and a government which hasn't actually been a particularly successful government, might look very much as if it's running on empty at a time when, because of Brexit and the huge changes that are going on in the world, you need an imaginative and dynamic government to respond to those sorts of challenges. But anyway, we will see what happens in the election. You're probably our viewers listening to this as the election is taking place. For those who want to know, the first exit poll from the BBC, which is usually pretty accurate, comes out at around 2200 hours London time. So if you sort of hang around until then, or switch on your TV or radio or go to the internet around then, you should get a fairly good idea of how Britain has voted.
Very quickly, Alexander, as people are going to be watching this video as the results come in, what are your feelings for the results? Are we going to see a Conserative majority? Are we going to see a hung parliament? What are your feelings on this?
I think we are going to see a Conservative majority. And my guess, and it's only a guess because this is a difficult election to call, is that it will be slightly bigger than that opinion poll, that YouGov opinion poll said. That's my own view. But as I said, they don't deserve it, not on the strength of this campaign. And their arrogance and complacency has annoyed many people. I'm going to say something else, by the way, which is a Labour person said this to me, and that is that one of the big differences between 2017 and this election is that the campaign last time was longer, and Labour had that extra week to get its act together and to pull it together. They don't have it this time, and that's also probably working in the Conservatives' favour too.
All right, Alexander Mercurius, Editor-in-Chief of The Durant, thank you very much. Guys, if you liked this video, click on the subscribe button down below. Click on that notifications bell to make sure you get notifications every time we publish a new video. Check us out on SoundCloud and on iTunes to get an audio copy of this video as well. And please donate to us on PayPal, Patreon, and Subscribestar. Your donation really helps this channel a whole lot. And you can also get this video on BitChute and on Durant Video. Durant Video is our own video platform, and BitChute is the free speech video platform. So we post all the videos we do on those two platforms as well. And we post everything we do in the Durant community on Telegram, the Telegram app. So download it for Android, for iPhone, and follow our channel. Subscribe to the Durant.com channel, and you'll be up to date with everything we're doing, including our big Durant Shop discount of 20%, DRN20. Put that code in when you're at the checkout. Some final thoughts, Alexander.
Well, final thoughts. I'm going to simply direct people to our shop and our wonderful things there, because I think on the election, I think the best thing to do is to wait and see, because now, as I said, it's all pretty much over. We will wait and see how people have voted. So this is a country, Russia. This is the coat of arms of Moscow, where, unlike Britain, there is dynamism and direction. It's actually very, very, very much a contrast when I look at Russian politics and Russian events, to compare the situation there with the situation here. And that makes me sad, by the way. And, you know, America, too, has a vital politics, however horrifying we sometimes find them. Britain does it. But there we go. So here is our wonderful Durand mug. It's got the coat of arms of Moscow. We've also got our own Durand mug. So these are the first two mugs from the Durand I ever got. You can just about, I think, see it with our own double-headed eagle there. Beautiful mugs, as I said many times, drinking again, because it's a cold, wet day here at the moment, Royal Blend tea, which is one of my favorite winter teas. You get it from Fortnum and Mason's. It's not actually expensive, despite the fact that that's a rather expensive shop, but the tea's on, and it's really fantastic. And it tastes wonderful if you drink it from a mug like this. 15 ounces, beautiful porcelain, incredibly elegant and stylish, wonderful to hold, perfect to have in your kitchen, or, well, actually, I keep them around my room because they look so great. And we don't just have mugs, not just, you know, we've got also, as well as our magic mugs, we have great shirts like the one I'm wearing right now, this really amazing Durand polo shirt. I'm going to a social event this evening, and this is what I will be wearing at it. So, you know, it's perfect for social events, because it's smart casual, the epitome of smart casual. The reason is because it's so well made. It's 100% cotton. All our shirts are, and we've got lots of other shirts, as well as polo shirts. We've got long sleeve t-shirts, short sleeve t-shirts, v-neck shirts. We've also got hoodies and hats and stickers. We've got great things, great items in our shop. This is, of course, the Christmas season. It's just the time to be going out buying things for yourself and for your family and for your friends. As Alex said, DRN20 is the discount code. So what are you waiting for? Support the Durand. Support yourself and your family and your friends by owning these great things. DRN20, go to our shop. Alex will tell you how.
TheDurandShop.com, DRN20 at the checkout page in the little coupon box. You'll see it there. Alexander Mercurius, editor-in-chief of The Durand. Thank you very much. Until next time, everybody. Take care.